Hasta la pasta, everyone. This week, we get thrust into the snout of madness firsthand while just trying to chill with some dogs at Coney Island. And the quality of one of Martin Scorsese's later gems is put under the microscope. Will the chaos be muzzled before it's too late? Find out in the latest Bic Zucco's Forever Almanac.
Once you had a glimpse, there's no way to go back. Raise yourself, it's Bic Zucco's Forever Almanac. Forever Almanac.
Good e'en, everyone. Thanks again is given to Johnny Lancia for that stellar theme song of ours. I'm your host, Daniel Kurland, and welcome back to Bic Zucco's Forever Almanac, a chronicle of reminiscences, where each week we read a new entry out of this mysterious literary masterpiece. It's been getting to you, hasn't it? You found yourself thinking about Bic Zucco's book in your off time, right? You'll be waiting in line to place an order at Ruby Tuesday, and one of the entries will flit through your brain. Or maybe you'll be driving home from work and miss your turn because you just need to know what happened to Mr. Zucco next. That's the power of this thing. It gets under your skin. I tried to forget about this tome. I even rid myself of it by throwing it into the garbage bin. And yet, somehow, it's now on my table and I'm doing a podcast on it. Some things we just need to accept and embrace. What I'm trying to say is that we all have responsibilities. This book is a responsibility, having access to all of it all the time. A weaker man would have overdosed on Zucco by now, greedily binging on all the entries at once. The paramedics would rush in and find his schlub face down in the bathroom, the Forever Almanac in one hand, his other hand cut off, pages of the manuscript crammed into the bloody wrist hole. Why? Because he was bicking so hard he didn't even know if the real was real anymore. And often, when reality is up for grabs, you're going to end up losing a hand. So an entry from the book, where Bic is dealing with responsibilities of his own, seemed like a fitting choice for today. This one's called, Man Bites Dog, Park Eats Both. Hopefully, you'll all make it through this one with your wrists intact. Man Bites Dog, Park Eats Both. I'm sweating. A lot. To be fair, it's the middle of June in New York City, but this wetness all over me has nothing to do with the weather systems or the Coriolis effect. The universe is flipping a giant Bic Zucco-shaped coin on my future, and Lawrence is the one catching that sucker. And on Monday, I'll know. On Monday, I'll either be drinking out of celebration or resignation, but either way, I'm going to be drunk. You see, Lawrence, one of the best publishing agents in the city, has my manuscript, and once he gets back from his trip on the weekend, I'll know if he likes it or not. What's even more exciting is that if he likes this book, titled Hay is for Horses, But So Are Heroics, then I'm set for a while, as it's meant to be the first book in a series of novels called The Adventuestrians. If he spares this horse from the glue factory, well, then I'm riding it all the way to Famous Author Boulevard. To load this coin flip even further, when I heard Lawrence discussing the topic of needing someone to look after his pet Bichon Frise, Coriolis, while he's gone for the weekend, I jumped at the opportunity. I figured if the man was on the fence about swallowing the novel that I passed his way, that he'd likely be more inclined to give me a hand if I was the one helping his dog swallow his meals. Wait, that was negligent of me. Lawrence's dog's name is Coriolis, so I shouldn't have needlessly mentioned the word Coriolis when discussing the weather earlier. That must have been confusing. Fuck. I'm a confusing, terrible writer. Fuck. He'll hate the book. But I'm allergic to dogs, and I've still got this tiny guy rooming with me for 2 days. That's how nervous I am about this whole thing. And I'm not a dog guy. I have no idea what to do with this thing. Where do I take him? Bowling? An arcade? A lot of people take dogs to arcades, don't they? Shit. I'm going to need to get quarters and then figure out where the nearest arcade is and then get Coriolis on the subway and... But then the universe flipped another coin that day. In fact, several coins were being flipped at once, as if the universe was a being of many thumbs, each one with greater flipping strength than the last. The coin for the arcade landed on no, and the coin for Coriolis deciding to urinate all over my newspaper landed on yes. And lo and behold, Coriolis had urinated all over a full-page ad in the paper. The ad was proudly featuring Coney Island's first annual Pet Day, which was occurring on June 11th, which happened to be today. From this point on, I never would again underestimate the power of bladders. I was suspicious of the ad initially, as the entire concept seemed to revolve around the idea of many pets actually riding the mammoth Wonder Wheel. This in itself seemed like a disaster. What if a dog leaped from the top? What if a dog got sick and vomited all over another dog? Or a cat, even? Wars have been started over less. But all they were asking for admission was a can of dog food, which Lawrence had left an abundance of with me before he left, and the paper made numerous mentions that the world-famous dog Bob was going to be there too. So how dangerous could it be? Bob wouldn't sully his name for an inferior event, would he? With Bob, it's really hard to say, considering this is the first time I've heard of him, and he's, you know, a dog. But within an hour, Coriolis and myself found each other getting off the F train and slowly approaching the boardwalk. The paper said that the costume contest for the pets was also going on, so as not to appear in poor fashion, I had sent Coriolis out in a bow tie. It seemed awkward and out of place on him, so I at the last minute grabbed a headband with cat ears on it, going the whole postmodern route. But it only made the image all the more surreal. This led to me putting on cat ears myself to try and balance out the visual, but only succeeded in increasing the amount of cat ears being worn by the two of us. My surrogate dog and I, dressed in business cat-sual. Approaching the boardwalk was unnerving enough as wave after wave after wave of pets kept popping into my field of vision. I took a glance behind me and there were even more taking up the rear, almost like a horde of zombies staggering towards a feast. These four-legged zombies on leashes, each one with a name like Daisy or Bonesworth or Whiskers, the sunlight hitting the brooch on Daisy's collar, or the buttons on Bonesworth's little leather jacket, and the earrings dangling from Whiskers' appendages. I won't get into what the owners look like, because they somehow manage to be even weirder-looking images than their pets. And as I passed the store windows of the beach shops and sugar shacks, fleeting glimpses of myself were reflected back at me, reminding me that I too was one of them. Today, I was one of them. As we entered the park, a woman collected our dog food and asked for Coriolis' name. I answered the question, and she wished myself and Coriolix a good day. Not long after, we passed a weirdly nice, or maybe it was a nicely weird, looking man. He didn't have a pet present, but seemed to be in charge of giving treats out to all of the parkgoers. He said to me, "Some rides don't have any lines," and then handed me something tiny wrapped up in tinfoil. It was a sugar cube. Bizarre, sure, but not any weirder than half of the other stuff going on here today. In the end, it was encouraging just to see a good-hearted people still existing in this world, to support noble causes like animals and pet care. Coriolis started whimpering when I was about to eat the sugar, and thankfully I happened to find a discarded piece of tinfoil on the ground, complete with cube of energy, so that Coriolis and I could both have a little pick-me-up together. I tend to hesitate before feeding an animal any sort of candy, but Coriolis was looking particularly fatigued, and we are at an amusement park. The little guy is going to need his energy. We munched on our sugar cubes together, like two debutantes sizing up the appetizers at a wine tasting, and started moving towards the line for the Wonder Wheel. There was certainly more than enough for us to do there, and I was actually more than a little curious to see what the bone-flavored doggy ice cream was like. But the line for the Wonder Wheel kept growing longer and longer, and it seemed a wise decision to check out this main attraction before it was no longer possible. Besides, while up top we'd be rewarded with a breathtaking, or should I say bark-taking, view of the entire park. Maybe we'd even spot Bob. Coriolis and I inched closer and closer to the front of the line, but it seemed as if things were taking forever. The heat was getting to us, and unwanted thoughts of my novel and my future and responsibility kept rushing through my head. I felt my teeth starting to tighten in my mouth and my eyes start to unfocus, as if they were viewing life in CinemaScope. I wasn't able to give these things the proper attention they deserved, because at that moment there was an incredible grinding noise that echoed through the park. Then, there was silence. People and pets alike surveyed the area, no one detecting anything to be off-kilter, but then it happened again. An even louder grinding noise that was met with metallic clucking, like the strings of some robot harp being cut loose. There was an all-too-brief silence once more, and then a Yorkshire Terrier plummeted from the sky and fell on the ground in front of me. This is when the screaming started. It seems impossible that the people on the ground started screaming at the exact same time that those on the Ferris wheel did, but that's what it sounded like. Just this wash of dissonance erupting from everywhere simultaneously. A wire hair dashing dropped 15 feet from me, what looked like a Maltese connected with the ground near the front of the line. The metallic cacophony grew louder now, and rivets from the Wonder Wheel started bursting loose from its reinforcements. Something had gone wrong with the ride. More rivets sprung loose, one connecting with an elderly man, slicing his arm open. He dropped his cane, falling to the ground, his labradoodle in a cowboy hat licking at the fresh wound. The monstrous wheel began to rock back and forth, still turning on its predetermined axis. The line-goers started retreating at this point, sacrificing their well-earned spots and the bark-taking view for their own general safety. A Parson Russell Terrier exploded when it met the ground. Coriolis and myself had moved to a safe distance, but the people and pets still trapped on the ride didn't have such an easy escape plan. As the wheel continued to turn, more bolts and restraints broke free. It appeared as if some people were even considering jumping from the ride, abandoning their pint-sized companions as they scrambled for some sort of rescue. It was all moot anyway. Before any betrayful decisions could take place, Dino's Wonder Wheel had fully broken free and slowly began rolling forward toward the rest of Coney Island. A miniature schnauzer free fell to the earth, the name tag Butch hanging from its broken neck. And of course, it was at this point that the acid had fully kicked in.
Those fizzard creeps that at one time friendly stranger had given me, had given Coriolis, there was no mistaking what they had been at this point. As the newly liberated wheel kept moving forward, I looked down to see how my dog, no, my publisher's dog, Fox, was doing. I felt a sharp tug on my arm, and before I even realized what had happened, Coriolis had run away. He didn't even look back. He just yelped once and started blitzing away from the newly independent wheel. A Havanese rocketed to the ground, landing on a discarded bone-flavored doggy cone and erupted into a wet mess that effectively quelled my appetite for ice cream. I tried to concentrate on the serious matter at hand, that I had lost my publisher's dog and dropped acid with the mutt, but my eyes kept getting drawn to the Wonder Wheel's weight. It had now completely rolled away to some other soon-to-be cemetery, and all that remained was a clear path of many dogs and owners massacred on the ground. Tibetan spaniels cut in half, Italian greyhounds crushed into the grass, my recently awoken brain swirling the blood of one dog to another, the colors dancing into this morbid rainbow of red, connecting the dots between a poodle's broken leg to a golden lab's severed tail to a chihuahua's uncoiled colon. My feet not running away, but instead my eyes kaleidoscoping the image. 3 dead dogs becoming 12 dead dogs becoming 39 dead dogs. I should have just gone to the arcade. I began to run around the park, aimlessly looking for Coriolis, becoming my own perverse version of a dog chasing its own tail. There was a wash of mortified people and panicking animals, but they were largely outnumbered by the many pieces of pet costumes that now littered the ground, left in a frantic hurry to escape. Looking like some pet rapture had just taken place. I thought about a pet rapture and what would qualify a good pet from a bad pet. The possibilities were near endless, and the ways to divide and measure one pet trait from the next even more so. I picked up a stick and wrote about this in the ground for 15 minutes or 2.5 hours. It's impossible to tell which. Before I remembered, I had more pressing matters at hand than pet raptures. I ventured into an alley between some of the rides and ran right into a wall that was completely covered in Bob posters. Every inch was filled. Every inch was Bob. The acid setting off pointillism explosions on them all. The paint candy sloth hair on Bob's head expanding and contracting at will, making me wonder why a boy dog named Bob would have pink hair, or why a girl dog with pink hair would be named Bob. Bob is a palindrome. Never a foot too far, even, is too. Was it a car or a cat I saw? Palindrome. Too far away, no mere clay or royal ceremony, a war afoot. Also palindrome. Also a palindrome? Deliver desserts, demanded Nemesis. Amended, named, stressed, reviled. It became pretty clear that everything was now a palindrome. And why shouldn't they be? The world's spaces reduced to reversibility while man looked for dog. I nearly swallowed my gum. I'd somewhere acquired gum. Or maybe it was my tongue. Impossible to tell. When I thought I saw Coriolis in the distance of the cyclone coaster, across from a patch of destroyed animals. A number of them lingered along, not quite dead, but seriously injured. I'm sure it was the acid that created this visual, but I'm positive that the surviving animals had divided themselves into factions, between cats and dogs, and that they were ready to finish this. That even if this Wonder Wheel disaster hadn't taken place, that this confrontation still would have. That this War of the Beasts had been well in the works now, and even though they had been damaged by the outside force of the unexpected, they were still determined to battle the others. The injured cats and dogs charging at each other, teeth bared, claws drawn, tails knocking, paws up from under the ground. All of these ridiculous warriors wearing pieces of costumes and apparel, flair ornamenting their wounds. It all looked like that epic battle from Scorsese's Guns of New York playing out before me.
Okay, hi. This is Daniel again. I'm sorry to interrupt Zuko's story, as I really feel that the flow of these things should remain intact and unaltered, but there's a rather large related footnote that happens here, which is a review Bix Zuko wrote for the movie Gangs of New York. He must think the movie's title is Guns of New York, though, because that's what he continually refers to it as. I think you should get to process this book the same way I am, so here's his review. Last night, I had the displeasure, or should I say pleasure, no, I was right the first time because this film was a mess, I had the displeasure of seeing auteur Scorsese's latest celluloid dream, Guns of New York. Now, I tend to be a fan of Martin's movies. Goodfellas is one of my all-time favorites, and I happened to lose my virginity while watching Kundun, but this one is another story. First of all, for a film called Guns of New York, there's essentially every weapon in this movie but guns. So why call it that? Why make that the title? Why not call it Weapons of New York instead? An easy fix. I also couldn't decide on what was more distracting, trying to figure out when the guns were going to make their appearance, or Cameron Diaz as a redhead. No one was buying it in the theater I was seeing it in. A lot of, yeah right, Camerons. And I'm so sure is being thrown in her direction from the audience. The film was not without its merits, though. I did like the scene where Bill the Butcher, played by chameleon thespian extraordinaire Daniel Day-Lewis, throws his knife into that guy and then yells, "That's a wound!" Remarkable scene, although he should have been yelling, "That's not a gun!" instead. Overall, 3/4 out of 4. Let's hope Scorsese can get his groove back. That's the review. Brilliant. Okay, let's get back into Zuko's story now.
And on my way back, I found him. I saw Coriolis grab his leash, and in one continuous motion just kept striding for the entrance gate. Truthfully, I didn't even know if it was Coriolis, but it was a Bijan that was desiccated, which passed any sort of criteria I was holding onto at the time. As we reached our freedom, the world exploding behind us, the nice and weird, weirdly nice man that had been given us the acid was just covered in a swarm of animals. It took me a moment to even realize that's what was going on, that the man was slowly being disassembled by a roving sea of fur. Whether they knew what they were doing or not, or just from an innate sense of justice being willed out through these tiny instruments. Coriolis and I stepped to the side, peered around a pug that had blown to pieces from its Wonder Wheel exodus, and stepped over upside-down flyers for Coney Island's pet day, ignoring the fact that when flipped over, the date 6/11 looks exactly like 9/11. One final eerie palindrome of sorts, and headed for the F train. Coriolis and I almost instantly fell asleep on the long ride home, but before we did, we managed to get a quick look out the window, just as the sun was setting. And wouldn't you know it, we got that breathtaking view after all.
When Lawrence returned from his trip, I presented him with his dog and everything went fine. Of course it did. And whether my act of Samaritanism was the deciding factor or not, he gave me the good news that the Adventquestrians would get let loose from their stables and see the light of day. I had 4 days to bask in this good news before Lawrence told me that Coriolis died of a sudden heart failure. He had no idea of the reason and wasn't telling me out of culpability, but rather to keep me in the loop over the dog I had spent some time with. But I knew that it was really my fault, that I had killed Coriolis. And that's the end of the story. That was something else. Like I said, the theme this week is responsibility. Bick was irresponsible with Coriolis, even lying to his owner about him, and it looked like he had gotten away with it. And yes, I suppose he had in a technical sense, but life doesn't operate that simply, and now Bick has to live with the guilt of that dog's life on his hands. I noticed it in some of the other entries in the book, and just as I was flipping through it, but at the time it didn't make any sense to me. But Coriolis's name is written repeatedly in the margins of the Forever Almanac, I guess showing that Bick never did get over it. It's all right with you guys. This story has really opened my eyes a lot, and I'm going to spend the rest of the day playing with my pup, Cooper. And no, you guys, we won't be having any sugar cubes. How could you even think that I would be... I'm Daniel Kurland, and I'll see you guys next week. But until then, the Chronicle is chroniclosed.
Once you had a glimpse, there's no way to go back. Raise yourself, it's Big Zuko, Forever Almanac. Forever Almanac.